In this episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, we're going to take a trip to Sunny Cove. We're going to have a look at Foveros in 3D. We'll be slipping in with the Spectre Folio. We'll be ray tracing in a battlefield, and we'll have a ROG phone. What is that? And we're giving away free stuff with Lenovo, too. Next. Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks. Although today we be two geeks. That's it. There aren't 2.5. There's only two of us. I am joined here, as always, with the faithful and trustworthy and ever dependable Marco Cipetta. How you doing, buddy?
Doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. If I keep eating like I have been, we'll be back to 2.5 even with just me and you.
Oh, stop that. You're spelled. Oh,
the holidays are hard, baby. Lots of food.
Yeah, I was going to say, everybody puts a little holiday weight on. That's par for the course. Par for the course. Yeah, no, I got to stay away from the Christmas cookies. It's the baked goods that get me. They're,
I'm not a sweets guy. For me, it's the savory. You know, yeah. Like that stuff I can just like wings and pizza and just, oh my gosh, I can go nonstop.
Those Christmas wings and pizza. There you go.
You found me out.
Oh man. Well, you know, I tell you, yeah, I'm not much of a sweets guy either, but it's just having it around. Like I don't have willpower for stuff. Like if it's around, I'm going to eat it, whatever it is. If it's not around, I don't miss it. I'll eat salad and be totally fine. But you put crap in my general vicinity and I'm going to eat it. I get no willpower.
Yeah. It's I'm exactly the same way. If the house has good stuff in it, I'll be good. If I'm traveling or the house has crap in it, I'm going to eat the crap. That's just how it goes.
Well, you know, hey, you got to cheat once in a while. And you, like the rest of the world, will probably be back at the gym come January with your New Year's resolution and back in fighting shape once again. Guaranteed.
hope so.
And we're getting ready to gear up for CES in Las Vegas, Nevada, Sin City, as it were, where 150,000 of your closest friends or so converge upon that place for absolute tech mayhem. What are you looking forward to before we dive into the particulars? What are you looking forward to the most with CES this year? Anything?
So, I'm looking forward to the unwashed massive geeks that we have to elbow through, number one. And you know what? I'm looking forward to see some of the crazy new TVs that are coming. I made the mistake of upgrading my home theater with an entry-level 4K TV. You know, I was coming from an older 1080p, but a nice, you know, 3D high-end 1080p TV. And I really regret going with an entry-level 4K. The quality of the panel is just, it's night and day. It's nowhere near as good as a 1080p panel. So I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, the new TVs come so that the current really nice 4K TVs come down in price and are more approachable.
So what do you have, like an LED or something 4K TV that's not cutting the mustard?
I mean, it's not bad. It's a 55-inch Samsung the UNK series, like the entry level 4K. It's an LED, it's a LCD TV. It's not bad. It's definitely not a crappy TV, but in terms of panel quality versus so it's a 60 Hertz 4K panel, with HDR though, versus the 1080p panel I had, which was a 240 Hertz high end 3D compatible panel. It's just night and day. Yeah. Everything about the 1080p panel is better except resolution.
I going from where I'm coming from, it's probably like night and day again. Even your cheap 4K set. I have a 50-inch 1080p Panasonic plasma. Panasonic, yeah. And it's beautiful. It's still working great, but it's a freaking nuclear reactor. You walk by it, it's like warm. It's such a power hog. It's time to migrate. I bought it back in the day for like $2,500. You can get something as big, much higher resolution, HDR, the whole shooting match for like $500 now. So
see, but crazy. I think you'd probably be in the same boat I'm in. You wouldn't like the newer panel versus the higher end older panel.
Really?
I mean, that's just how I was. I don't know. Maybe I'm being anal about it, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, saying hey to Craig in the chat. Good to have you with us, Mr. Dieter. Anyways, let's move on to some tech news and reviews that we've been stepping through for the week. We actually last week took a little pause, a little siesta with our friend Scott Wasson from AMD's Radeon Technology Group, and discussed their new drivers, their driver drop, adrenaline driver drop. But so we didn't get a chance to cover some of this stuff that we had a very eventful week. The week before last. Was it the week before last or last week? I guess it was early last week. Yeah. So at any rate, I actually took a little trip to sunny San Jose. Thank God, because it's been miserable and cold and dark out here in New England, as always, right? Up in New York and Connecticut, I'm sure too. Yeah.
Oh, super chilly right now.
This time of year, you just can't escape it. So it was nice to escape to the West Coast and hang with my friends at Intel. And we got to do an architectural deep dive on some of their latest technologies and some impressive stuff. Some stuff that I think, you know, folks had kind of been critical of Intel on, where they needed to demonstrate some execution, some key execution. I think we're beginning to see some very impressive signs of that, some stuff that brings hope to us. And let's talk about something first that impressed the heck out of me when I saw it live there and functioning. But when you dig into the details and the you know, the slide work, you know, when we get into the PDF and the white papers, even more impressive perhaps, Intel Foveros, hopefully I'm saying that right, I think I am, to usher in an industry first 3D stacked system on a chip design. Marco, you wrote this guy up for us, so I know you sifted through the weeds on that. What do you know? It's pretty cool looking stuff.
Yeah, so this is very interesting technology. So if you're familiar with the 3D die stacking, this is similar but different. So, you know, we've had 3D stacking of dies in memory, but this is the first time that complex logic can be stacked in 3D. Now, Foveros, working in conjunction with the EMIB technology, the embedded multi-die interconnect that Intel invented in the lead up to Kaby Lake G, it was revealed, you know, Kaby Lake G's got the Radeon Vega and HBM2 memory with a processor core connected on the same package through the EMIB. Now, the EMIB allows for, you know, 2D integration of different dies. And, you know, when you think about it, it would allow Intel to integrate dies manufactured using different processes. So, you know, let's say they have a next gen CPU core at 10 nanometer, but there's, you know, other IO controllers that don't necessarily scale and don't need to be manufactured on the latest bleeding edge tech. All this stuff can be pieced together in 2D via EMIB. And now with the Foveros technology, they can now do 3D stacking of complex logic to create, you know, really densely packed chips with tons of functionality. So the way the technology works, and, you know, Dave got to see some of these chips live, there's through silicon vias and there's little micro bumps that allow for the stacking of the logic, or of the chips, I should say. And it's, you know, really high bandwidth connections. So it's probably not going to behave exactly the same as a monolithic, you know, piece of silicon, but it is a high bandwidth, you know, high bandwidth link. So things should behave really well. And Intel actually showed a chip. Let me just get the numbers right here. So this chip had low power and high performance CPU cores, in addition to POP memory, you know, small form factor memory, in a little tiny 12 by 12 millimeter chip that only consumed 2 milliwatts of standby power. So this is some really interesting stuff. You know, I believe the particular chip Dave saw live was for a customer. It wasn't revealed who or exactly what application, if I'm correct. But this is, you know, stuff that's going to be productized relatively quickly in 2019. And it's, you know, brand new bleeding edge tech that they just revealed. It's, you know, really interesting stuff.
Yeah, no, it is. It's fascinating what Intel's been doing. This is an industry first. I think that the folks in NAND flash memory have done this before. They've stacked memory on top of each other, you know, multi-layer designs. Same thing with HBM2. You get some 3D stacking there as well. So through silicon vias are not new technology, but combining memory and logic and, you know, CPU structures as well as memory structures as well as control structures through silicon is a first, and it's impressive stuff. And you're right, Marco. It was a custom request from a customer that Intel. You know, obviously, when you spend this kind of R&D on this technology, you need a broad market justification to roll it out. Customer's got to be big, but this will also be a standard product as well. So you will see this CPU in, what they were demonstrating it in was a little smaller than a toaster size, small form factor PC box, no, fanless, completely fanless. And it was streaming 4K video and running Windows and all that good stuff. Just absolutely sipping power. And that chip is so small. It's like, I don't know how it's slightly smaller than a standard US stamp, to give you a sense of size. I would say actually, you know, like if you do a standard, not your holiday, goofy holiday stamps, but a standard one, a postage stamp. It's like, dang, you know, I didn't see that coming when I tripped out there to San Jose. Did not see that coming.
Yeah, I mean, you know, basically it would allow Intel, you know, you can have all these little chiplets. You could have a 10 nanometer chiplet with a 14 nanometer chiplet and a 22 nanometer chiplet, and you can have CPU cores, memory, graphics, you know, communications, modems, you know, IO, all on a chip. And if you need, you know, more performance, stack it, you know, in 3D. So it can make for some really interesting form factors and, you know, some really cool and powerful, you know, products on network edge, which I'm assuming this is sort of in preparation for 5G, because they were talking specifically about communications. There's just, you know, there's lots of stuff that could happen. And in the back of my head, I was thinking, I wonder between EMIB and Foveros, if this is sort of a solution for multi-GPU, could they... I'm totally just guessing and throwing this out there. I may be incorrect in how I'm understanding the tech, but I believe technically they could stack two GPUs and have it appear as one, you know, because instead of having a big monolithic die and, you know, lowering yield during manufacturing because it's more complex and just a bigger piece of silicon, you could increase yield and just stack, and maybe it appears as one GPU when it's, you know, like this is just all stuff you can, you know, kind of think about moving forward. Intel, if they pull all of this together and execute, they have some really cool tech here.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that Intel, you don't think of them in terms of packaging technology. You think of them as a silicon, you know, Chipzilla, silicon manufacturing machine. And this is packaging, but it's also, you know, fabrication as well. And so it speaks to, you know, some of the things that they've worked through. EMIB was another sort of an industry first. I think there you're talking, you know, stuff that's been pioneered in other forms and other sorts of structures. But embedded multi-die interconnect EMIB was another, you know, breakout product for them, and demonstrated, I guess, an implementation of CPU and GPU that... again, we didn't see coming. People were kind of like looking at that, like, what, AMD and Intel working together on a single chip? What, dogs and cats living together? It's crazy. it's fascinating stuff. It will be interesting to see what Intel does with it, and you know, moving forward. And it does enable a lot of things. One of the things that's great about through silicon via is performance and latency. And as you noted, Marco, yields and manufacturing, it is much more manufacturable, much more cost effective to do this, to do through silicon vias versus, you know, standard interposer or what have you, where you're stacking with a substrate in between, a multi-chip module, chip and wire, if you will, chip and wire on a multi-chip module. That has yield loss, that has cost, and this gets rid of that and allows that level of performance to keep memory structures and other things close to each other to communicate fast, low latency, all that good stuff.
Absolutely.
Cool. Cool. Well, yeah, no, Intel seems to be on a roll lately. They had a little misstep, as everybody knew. I think it was probably a little bit overblown, but when a big gun like Intel it stumbles a little bit, I guess it probably stands out more than most. And so that 10 nanometer delay that we're also familiar with, Intel seems to be, and at least from what I gathered at my meeting with them, they seem to be past that now pretty well. And they went ahead and unveiled Sunny Cove, which is their next generation CPU architecture based on 10 nanometer technology. There is the roadmap there. You've got Sunny Cove, Willow Cove, and Golden Cove. We got all the coves for the core platform. And you see also they will continue to migrate the Atom platform to next generation 10 nanometer and beyond. Sunny Cove is the first 10 nanometer core series CPU. And we got a fair amount of detail on this chip. It is looking impressive. If you want to get really geeky and into the specifics, they talk about how it is a deeper and wider chip in terms of its resources, deeper caches, 50% increase of L1 data cache, larger L2 cache, just in general, micro op caches, second level TLB cache is all increased. So it's a deeper front end with heavier amounts of cache memory on board, and it's wider as well. So wider number of allocation and execution ports, 2-to-1 L1 store bandwidth, just additional resources on this chip, deeper and wider, and ready for additional simultaneous instructions and having a deeper cache resource to back that up. You talk about also migrations in terms of the GPU as well. We are now looking at Gen 11, which is the next generation GPU. They skipped 10. I don't know what happened. We're in Gen 9 graphics now for integrated Intel graphics. But Gen 11 is the next generation. And when you look at that as part of Sunny Cove integrated graphics, you go from 24 execution units to 64 execution units. So more than double the compute resources, graphics compute resources on board this chip. It will employ those execution units in 75% of the silicon area of Gen 9. So if you compared a single, Gen 11 execution unit versus a Gen 9 execution unit, 75% more efficient in terms of silicon real estate for that execution unit. So they're able to squeeze more on chip as a result of that, and certainly with 10 nanometer process as a result of that. Other forward-looking things that are built into this and current gen things that we haven't seen from Intel before. So it's DX12 compliant, obviously. It's also has on board support for adaptive sync technology. So FreeSync as well as G-Sync, adaptive refresh rate, timing the GPU output to the monitor refresh and getting those two resources in sync so that you have jitter-free, tear-free gaming. That's built in. And oh, by the way, it'll be backwards compatible to FreeSync monitors. So I was told specifically by folks there that at Intel that, any FreeSync monitor that's currently on the market, this will work. So it will not be G-Sync. That's NVIDIA is going to be sort of out on an island doing their own customized G-Sync technology. So that's good. And then the other thing it has is, again, when I speak about forward-looking graphics rendering, it has What's the thing? Adaptive rate shading. So basically, shader technology, instead of shading a whole scene, the shader is intelligent enough when programmed and utilized to shade areas of the machine that are in closer view that need more detail fully, and areas that are in the perimeter or perhaps not in direct view or off at an angle, it will shade them less. So it's more efficient shading, increases performance. And then the final thing was that we actually saw Sunny Cove running live, demoing Gen 11 graphics gaming. And they showed Tekken 7, actually, was the game title. It's a fighting game. And it's basically... I'm trying to think of I'm forgetting the game title. That's also a fighting game, but anyways, I believe it's Unreal Engine based, if I'm not mistaken. And what we saw was Sunny Cove, Gen 11 versus Gen 9, and frame rate was clearly better on Sunny Cove, Gen 11. I would hazard a guess that it looked like 2x. We saw something where there was clearly stutter and lag, looking like it was dropping below the 30 FPS barrier, even to something that was buttery smooth, had to be, well north of 30, probably approaching 60 FPS at 1080p. And so with great image quality. So that was an impressive demo. And I don't know if you took anything away from that. It also supports things like tile-based rendering. And I don't know what your takeaways were for Sunny Cove, Marco, but that whole demo and seeing it up and running impressed the heck out of me.
Yeah. So my takeaways are, Intel is not only planning to increase performance and feature set in their processors and graphics, but looking forward to the newer manufacturing process, they're going to be bigger, faster, wider all around. So it looks like the message is, we're not messing around in graphics, whether it's going to be discrete coming later or what's integrated into next-gen processors. So, you got to see it live. So your take is obviously going to be different than mine. As an outsider who saw it, who basically read the article and saw the slideware, it appears that, the sleeping giant is awake and they're like, here's all that we're doing. Now it's just up to them to pull it off.
Yeah. I think, there was a period in time when they perhaps couldn't have demonstrated this, obviously, but they were clearly ready. They set a date in the calendar, flew a few of us out. I would say probably about 30 or 40 of us there, maybe 30. And so it was a relatively small group of press and tech heavy press and analysts, folks that were sort of in the know. Relative, to deep core technology. It was an architecture overview. So yeah, it was. It impressed me that that they have this thing. It looked like it was doing things that looked market ready now. But I think it's second half of 2019, if I'm not mistaken, that we will actually see product in market. So yeah, good stuff. And thanks, Craig, in the chat. Mortal Kombat was what I was trying to think of in my aging brain. It's one of those, one-on-one horizontal fighting games. Yeah, one of those. And looked great. Looked real good. And actually, they also demonstrated the adaptive refresh rate technology with a demo, not a game, but they had a demo where they were spinning a model and it was running on a 60 hertz panel. And when things were out of sync and the card wasn't keeping up or vice versa, the graphics weren't keeping up versus the panel or vice versa, you would see tearing and then they'd flip it on and the thing got perfect. And what was interesting about that was, and if you think about it, it makes sense. Intel, when you talk about integrated graphics, you're not going to have the kind of horsepower you have in a discrete chip. It's just the way it is. It's physics. They're going to be enabling new types of experiences that we might not have assumed were capable in an integrated graphics chip, but it's still integrated graphics, 1080p, all that good stuff, medium to high image quality. I think, it's a reasonable target for some games, but, adaptive refresh rate really helps in locking that in when you drop below 60 frames per second, when you need to keep up with a 60 hertz panel and get things in time. So it makes a lot of sense for the product to have that in there. And it was good to see that they incorporated that. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Adaptive refresh rate technology it's a game changer when you see it live, you know, just to smooth everything out and get rid of the many of the visual artifacts. You know, I'm fairly certain they probably could have done it on older GPUs because panel self-refresh was a mobile tech that I believe worked similarly. It's just, it's officially coming, though, with Gen 11 and future graphics, which, you know, it's a good development. So kudos.
Keep bringing it. And the other thing we should sort of give them a little pat on the back, and we don't want them to get too confident now, right? But we have a high ranking exec that we're pretty close with, a guy by the name of Chris Hook, who we were perusing his Facebook page, and we launched an article on it when we saw this because it struck a chord with us. Intel's Hook seen detailing community feedback as GPU engineers listen intently. That was the headline that we put up. And basically what Intel did was, I don't know if you can put that up and show the image, John, but what Intel did was they went on Reddit, and instead of doing an Ask Me Anything, AMA, they did an Ask You Anything, AYA. And get all kinds of acronyms going on. And what they did there was they went out and asked the community, you know, what are you looking for in a discrete next generation discrete graphics product? This is the graphics team, the visualization team within Intel that is looking for feedback from the community. They wanted to engage directly. There you go. And if you scroll down a little bit, John, it's jumping around. You're getting an ad. Oh, they'll love those ads. So there's Chris Hook there, and he's pointing to some data tables, results of the AYA, some feedback from the community, and those people in the audience are the Intel engineering team. Okay, and so hardware and software engineers that are defining the product now, taking direct feedback from the community and considering it and having a discussion over it and literally thinking about incorporating this feedback directly into their design efforts, whether it be hardware or software. So that is something that I'm not sure I would have expected to ever see from Intel. How about you, Marco?
Well, I mean, it makes sense to, they're obviously going to do market research and incorporate what they feel are strong things into a product. This overt, you know, hey, look at me, here's what we're doing, and blasting it out publicly is new. Now, one thing that I find interesting in that chart, and I'm sure Intel is thinking the same thing and people there are thinking the same thing. You know, the second most talked about item was, you know, Linux support related. Mm. And As I'm not dissing Linux, but to have it, you know, that high up on the list as a priority, it doesn't really think that, I don't think that reflects market reality. I think it was because there's so many nerds on Reddit, and I use nerd lovingly. I'm a nerd too. You know what I'm saying? Like it skews the conversation quite a bit, but still good to see, you know, Intel engaging directly and literally, you know, having the event and days later, they didn't sit on this, presenting it that way, I think is good stuff.
Yeah. You know, and you make a good point. I think, you know, and I certainly didn't want to be dismissive. Intel and big, you know, heavy hitting OEM semiconductor companies like Intel, they do a ton of market research in the traditional sense, right? I mean, they're always reading the wire, you know, checking into what makes good sense for broad market adoption, for the kind of features they need to bring out to have a product successful in market. That's par for the course. You don't do that, you're dead. What is different is this community, direct community engagement. You talk about that, you know, skewing a voice of a community, and certainly on Reddit, there's some fairly technical folks. But it's, you know, I think you can see that they've probably, you know, they're going to temper this messaging from the community with a dose of reality. Here's what we can practically bring to market. Here's what makes sense from a traction standpoint, what might get us some broad market appeal. But it flags the perhaps the Halo talking points for a critical, vocal, technical audience that you know is involved on Reddit, and that's a smart thing. I mean, you might, even if you get, you know, out of that discussion, I think he's probably got on that chart, what, 8 or 10 different data points that, you know, are ranked in terms of how much they were voiced. Even if you get 2 or 3 that are actually adopted, it's a win for the community, and it shows that Intel is reacting to what's being said and what the community might want. That's goodness.
Yeah, agreed. Definitely.
So yeah, I guess we should probably move on from Intel, but I you know, it's funny. You know, we talked to the folks at Intel, you know, in a couple of interviews as well. You know, and the Q&A we did with Ari, the Intel graphics architect lead. And you know, we told them AMD, honestly, just, you know, we were very forward about this. AMD has cultivated a very strong following based on that open door, come talk to us, we're going to give you access sort of mindset. And I think it's smart for Intel to take note of that, whether or not they took note of it from AMD or not. And there's a few folks that were former AMDers now at the executive level at Intel. I think it's all goodness and good stuff for everybody in the community. Right, buddy?
Yes, no, it's definitely good stuff. I completely agree.
I'm basically just saying I'm yapping too much.
Shut your pie hole and let's move
on. Oh, shut your pie hole, boy. That's what I say to my dog, Yogi, when he's barking. Shut your pie hole, boy. All right, so I'll stop barking and I will move on to the next one. And this is something from HP, the Spectre Folio. We did a little review, a luxurious leather-clad beauty. Marco, you saw this in person, and Chris was going to talk about this today. We miss you, Chris, buddy. But he couldn't join us. So, Marco, why don't you talk about it, since I know you've fondled the goods.
I will talk about it, and I did fondle the goods. Now, I can summarize. So, our man Tuan checked out this machine, and I'm gonna summarize his experience in one sentence from the conclusion. You ready? This thing is knockout gorgeous, soft to touch, and has an amazing scent. Do you ever think you would hear that about a notebook or, you know, a portable device? So this machine is somewhat unique. Beautiful, beautiful machine. So the HP Spectre Folio is sort of, think of it as a high-end competitor to the Surface Pro, but it's not a detachable. So it has a kickstand, and everything is sort of linked together in the traditional sense, like a 2-in-1, but it has this leather sheath that's actually part of the structure. It's not just for looks. It's part of the hinge. It's part of the machine. Mm-hmm. And inside this particular model, we looked at 8th gen, you know, Intel Core i7 processor, 16 gigs of RAM, fast 256 gig Samsung SSD. So lots of this high-end mobile hardware in this ultra-thin, sleek mobile form factor that can do basically all of the unique positions that a 2-in-1 can do without removing the actual panel, without removing the tablet section. But in this really elegant, gorgeous design, and, you know, throughout testing, it proved to be a good performer. Tuan obviously loved how it looked. He loved the feel. The execution was there by HP. They really pulled off, you know, real innovation. I personally question the use of leather the way it is here, because I'm not sure how it's going to hold up in the hinge and, you know, in the center where the hinge is connected and out to the edges, there's nothing but leather. So I'm not sure how that holds up over time. But man, if you care about the styling of your mobile devices, and it's really no compromise. High-end hardware, super slim form factor, unique form factor with just gorgeous looks and a great feature set. I mean, HP knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, you know, John, I don't know if you can hit page 2. I'll try and paste it for you in the chat here, maybe. But if you hit page 2 of that review, you can see a little bit more detail on how the Folio sets up. You know, it's keyboard case. And well, it's really not a case. It's kind of like, you know, how the whole Folio package comes together with the keyboard. You know, you make a good point, and it's the first thing I thought of too. Looks great now, feels great now, even smells great. And by the way, I think Tuan is just a frustrated nerd because man, well, but it is gorgeous and it does smell good. You know, I feel like leather. Yeah, he equated it to, it's not, there you go. There's a good view of it. It's not the kind of leather you'd smell in a cheap Hyundai, but more like a Bentley. And he actually is a car review editor on occasion as well, high-end cars even sometimes, so he knows that smell pretty well. And so Bentley quality leather is what he's saying here, and so yeah, I guess the question is, how does it wear? Does it wear like a baseball glove, which wears nice, breaks in even, and sort of becomes your own? Maybe in that palm rest area you get a little bit of indentation, you know, it doesn't look too cruddy, but it just kind of breaks in and feels good and looks good because it's full grain leather. It's not pleather, right? It's not, you know, leather substitute stuff. It's real full grain leather. And yeah, I wonder how we'll have to come back in 2 or 3 years and see how this stuff is worn. It would be great to find some folks in market that have, you know, lived on this machine and day in and day out for 2 or 3 years and see how that shapes up. But yeah, I thought, you know, you're right. You're right about the innovation part. It's funny. Kudos to HP for innovating with a sort of traditional material that is almost retro. Like, who would think, well, you know, you got carbon fiber, you got magnesium alloy hybrid, you've got machined aluminum, all these cutting edge materials going into laptop these days. HP's like, oh, here's some leather.
Yeah, well, and you know, it's funny. It's not funny, but really everybody's competing with the same hardware. You know, Intel dominates the mobile space and all of the key players are using the same Intel mobile platform. So you innovate with materials, and it's a beautiful machine. If you have the ability to go check it out live somewhere, I think you'll dig it too. But again, it's just so new and such a new design. We have no frame of reference to see how it holds up. And now this particular model we looked at, even with, you know, a high-end Core i7, excuse me, and that slim form factor, really good battery life. It was in the upper quadrant. Performance was about mid-range, but that's what you expect. Even if you have machines with similar hardware, but a larger form factor, they just cool better. They have more cooling capacity, less throttling. So you're going to get a little better performance, but it's right there in the mix. I mean, just really, really dig it. Really nice machine.
Hey, John, is the stream okay right now?
I think the stream stopped. So we will, I guess, keep going and just... Okay.
It should be reconnected. If not, I'm going to try something else.
Okay. Because I am seeing what's basically a VOD right now. I think it dropped us. I don't know how.
It says we're live right now for me.
It says we're live?
We're live. It's live for me.
Hmm.
Yeah, the chat's live, back. I'm going to leave it.
Okay.
Yeah, and I see the chat again. Yep.
I don't even see the chat again. Weird. Okay. I don't know what I'm going to do here. I'll have to just fake it like I can see the chat.
Just refresh it there. I see Craig. He's still chatting.
I got two. Oh, there we go. Well, no, I'm not getting it. I'm not getting it for whatever reason. I can hit refresh, but I'll just keep rolling. So anyway, sorry about the interruption there, folks. Hopefully this all connects cleanly. So good stuff. It is an Intel, I don't want to say Core M, but it's Intel Core Y, so 4.5 watt CPU, correct?
Yeah, it was an 8500Y in the particular model we looked at.
Yeah.
So, but you still, if you look at the charts versus some high end machines, it obviously it's not as fast as some of the higher end ultrabooks we've looked at, but it's not that far off. You know, if you like the form factor, it's a really nice balance. Let's put it that way. A really nice balance of performance and hardware in a super elegant, sleek, unique package.
And it weighs like 3 pounds, right? It's pretty light. I think the leather probably adds a little bit of weight to it.
3.28 pounds for this particular one, and how big? 13.3 inch display.
Nice. Yeah. No, impressive stuff from the folks at HP. You know, it does take a lot to break out and innovate. Yeah, and actually, I just went to the live stream and I can see us now. I went to a different URL and got it. But yeah, it takes a little bit to break out these days, and in a time when laptops are, you know, they're kind of all looking alike. You're either machined aluminum or you've got a 360 swing hinge or your detachable keyboard. You know, how do you innovate? Well, let's break out the good old Naugahyde, the whole good old leather.
There you go.
So, yeah, you know, it's good stuff. I wonder if we'll see other OEMs try their hand at this. And I do want to see what this thing wears like moving forward. The HP Folio, Tuan loved it. Beautiful, gorgeous machine, and she even smells good. Nothing creepy about it, honest.
So many jokes.
yeah, man. You know, it's like, it's just funny. It's how many times do you get a laptop and you go, oh, smell that? Yeah, I might get the fresh package smell. It's sort of like the new car smell, but it's not like leather smell.
I have to tell a smell joke just because we're talking smells.
Please do. Please. Yes.
It's just funny. So no matter how good the soap smells, never walk out of the bathroom smelling your fingers.
That's wise advice. Yes. People be wondering what's going on there. All right. Let's stop with the smell jokes, and we'll go back to the rundown here. And we've got something else interesting that's happening these days. Ray tracing in video games. NVIDIA GeForce RTX ray tracing in Battlefield 5 explored pre and post patch. Our buddy Shannon Robb did this, and he actually looked at the performance sort of out of the box on day one for Battlefield 5 on NVIDIA's new GeForce RTX 20 series cards, and then post patch when there was an update that came through and increased performance, cleaned up a few glitches here and there, and then he looked at the benchmark numbers. It's fascinating to see that even a 2070 at 1080p can hack this game, you know, with ray tracing enabled. So, you know, in this case, and I think where NVIDIA got some criticism was that, you know, there weren't ray tracing capable titles in market when their GPU came out. But they quickly demonstrated in really a AAA title what ray tracing can do for you in terms of image quality and special effects, the screen space reflections and all that good stuff live and running in a game that historically has looked fabulous. It's been one of the best eye candy first person shooter games in the market, right? So Marco, what were your thoughts of this analysis and this demonstration, and do we have hope that this will get adopted by developers moving forward? Is this the new wave of things to come with ray tracing?
I think so. So the fact that Microsoft has DXR and NVIDIA has, you know, a hardware acceleration with their RTX tech, and of course, you know, this is using DXR. Yes, I think it's going to be adopted. I feel like we can almost spend an hour talking about just this. I wish there was a way to have a larger community to chat about this. When we were being briefed and when we were having talks about ray tracing a while back, one of the things that was mentioned was if you go to the early days of 3D, and I went and checked our numbers, and this was true. If you went and looked, let's say, like a Voodoo 5 review, when full screen anti-aliasing was sort of invented basically for gaming and was gaining popularity. If you flipped on 4xAA, your frame rate was cut in half, right? Yeah. That's just how it was. It literally was cut from 90 frames per second to 45 frames per second. So for a bleeding edge new tech like this that has really a huge visual impact where it's implemented, you should expect a performance hit. Now, when the first iteration hit with Battlefield 5, not only was the game broke, so applying low or medium or high settings was basically had the same performance impact as Ultra, but it wasn't fully optimized. They were ray tracing everything. So if there was a leaf falling or something tiny, it was all getting ray traced and consuming resources. So with the patch, NVIDIA fixed some of the issues with the implementation and then eliminated some of the stuff that's, you know, not going to be overtly obvious in the game. And boom, huge performance increase. In minimum frame rates on the 2070, some of the parts were, you know, 60%+ increase in performance. And this is the first title. This is, I'm not going to say the proof of concept, but this is the showcase title out of the gate with the earliest drivers possible and the earliest implementation possible. So not only do I think Battlefield 5 is going to get better as they continue to optimize and innovate, I do think over time this tech's going to be adopted. And I think the flack NVIDIA has gotten, and I know I'm going to get flamed for being a fanboy, is unfair. it's unfair. They came out with some bleeding edge innovative tech that has a huge visual impact. Is it perfect? No, but it takes us one step closer to full ray traced graphics. And people crapped on it because there was a performance impact that was larger than people expected. And in a few weeks, they reacted. And it's not perfect, but it's way better. You know, so I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with RTX and ray tracing. I don't look down on this. I think it's all good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think they took too much negative criticism on this than they justly deserved. I think NVIDIA made a bet here. They built in some new technology into the GPU that was leading the curve, cutting edge. and when you make a silicon bet, you're putting a lot on the line. You're putting your money where your mouth is, literally. And so I think the naysayers, you know, frankly, were a little bit short-sighted. I think it'll all depend on, you know, execution, Microsoft DXR, and how that rolls out in next generation games. But when you see it in Battlefield 5, and Shannon stepped through a detailed video, you really should check it out. We have it up in the channel, a detailed video demonstration of it at off, you know, here's what it looks like, you know, naturally in the game without it, just standard rasterized graphics off, low quality, and then ultra quality ray tracing. You can see there's a definite visual benefit. It looks fabulous. Some of the reflections off the ice, some of the reflections off, like, you know, your gun barrel when a explosion happens, reflections off of a vehicle in the area when an explosion happens. It's all much more immersive and real and sort of natural to the eye. The other thing is there's some strategic benefit to it as well. You can walk up to a window, and I think, John, you had it running on the screen. You can walk up to a window and see a reflection, actually a real real-time reflection in a window now that otherwise would be just a fuzzy, blurry mess. It looks kind of like a window reflection. And actually see someone coming up behind you or from the side of you or whatever. And some of the, astute gamers, the more, you know, seriously dialed in gamers, professional gamers, might make use of this technology to improve their gameplay. It's that impactful in spots. And so, yeah, it's, you know, I think it's a great technology that looks good. And then, yeah, of course there's a performance hit. You're adding a workload to something that has never been done before. And in real time, you know, it used to be that ray trace graphics, you know, you had a supercomputer work on, you know, frames to show an animation of a fully ray traced scene. This is at least partial scene, you know, hybrid rasterized and ray traced graphics in real time. And that's good stuff, man. I don't know how you can knock it. And sure, it's going to give you a little bit of performance hit, but if it's playable, certainly 1080p, I think a lot of gamers, if you look at the Steam hardware survey, the majority of gamers are gaming at 1080p. I think with a 2080 Ti, I think 1440p may have been, I'd have to look at the numbers, may have been doable.
Yeah. Yep. The 2080 and 2080 Ti did 1440p with ultra ray trace mode. playable. The 2070 was 1080p.
Gotcha.
And, gotcha. When you look at the algo, the algorithm, it seems so simple. It's not. But like, you know, with the I'm not going to read the whole thing, but like in ultra mode, with ultra DXR mode enabled, it's basically, you know, a scene is evaluated and any surface that has a certain smoothness level, so it's a 0.5 smoothness level, something that's reflective, and then 40% of that scene would get ray traced. So, you know, and obviously as you step down, the smoothness level and percent of the screen that gets ray traced is changed. So at low, something with a 0.9 smoothness factor and 15% of the scene would get ray traced. So that's how they lower the workload. Something has to be much smoother to reflect and then less of the scene is ray traced. But I'm looking forward to all this stuff. You know, we're in the teething mode now where all the kinks are being worked out. But I think this time next year, we're going to have some cool stuff to see on screen.
Yeah. And even, you know, going one step further with DLSS, I think a lot of folks sort of scoffed at that as being, you know, an NVIDIA, you know, sort of tapping into the AI buzzword and putting tensor cores on there. Well, you know, I think DLSS has the capability, and I've seen it live and in person, has the capability to seriously increase performance, give you anti-aliasing quality with minimal impact on performance because you have dedicated, you know, tensor cores now, some machine learning that does image comparison and cleans up the scene for you without traditional re-rendering processes that are required for traditional AA. So it's you know, I think RTX took a lot of heat unnecessarily, and I don't know. Yeah, call us fanboys. We're not, but you can if that makes you feel good.
But I mean, I come from a time
I like so new tech.
Where we used to have to manually optimize HiMEM sys and QEMM and load drivers and config sys and auto exec and set jumpers because plug and play wasn't invented yet. So,
oh, dude,
you know, it was a lot harder back in the day.
Yeah.
So, also now, you know, like AA is free, anisotropic filtering was free, and some of the younger generation, they're a little spoiled. You know, it wasn't always this way. If you invent something new, the first iteration is the first iteration is never the best iteration, you know?
But you have to step
forward, and this is a step forward.
Yeah, I mean, I totally can see the case to be made for sit back and wait if you don't want to be an early adopter and, you know, take the cost hit maybe because they're expensive cards, no question about it. Yeah, totally get that. But, you know, don't like crap all over it just because it's groundbreaking and new and it costs money to invent this stuff. Literally, that's what's happened.
Yeah, the same people whining about it are the ones that were whining, well, we don't need quad cores. You know, why do we need more cores? No one uses apps that are going to take advantage of it. Now look where we are, you know, so this stuff has to happen.
Has to happen. Keep the innovation train moving. All right, let's move on as well, and then we'll wrap this thing up quick. Let's talk about Asus and the ROG phone, supercharged Snapdragon for gaming. This is an interesting device, a blistering performance, intelligent design. There it is, the Asus ROG phone, powered by a Qualcomm Snapdragon 845, 8 gigs of RAM, has a 6-inch AMOLED display, 2160 by 1080 screen, but 90 hertz refresh rate with 1 millisecond response time and 550 nits of brightness. So big old bright, fast display. And Snapdragon 845, 8 gig of RAM. Now, I will say, you know, you can get this kind of setup in a OnePlus phone. You might not get that display, but you can get a Snapdragon 845 with 8 gig of RAM or 6 gig of RAM if you want to save a few pesos. So that's not groundbreaking. The display is, and then I think the build quality and the setup is as well. 4,000 milliamp hour battery, which is key, because if you're going to be gaming on this thing, if that's your thing, if you want to game on your handset, you're going to need some extra battery. And so 4,000 milliamp hour battery is nice, chunky battery on board. And the design is cutting edge and sort of, I should say, edgy. You know, interesting looking device. What were your thoughts about it? It's also set up for air triggers and advanced haptics, and it has some special cooling on board. Gimmick or credible? What do you think, Marco?
A little of both, but ASUS did some awesome stuff. So, you know, moving that second, there's a second USB-C port on the side of the phone so that if you're using it landscape for a particular game, the cords aren't shooting out of the side and getting in your way. It also allows you to attach some of the cool accessories and get your fingers off the screen without having, you know, one side being bumped out further than the other. There's some really smart stuff. There's even, you know, an active cooling module that can snap onto it. Now, you're not going to carry that in your pocket all the time, but when you're whacking those SoCs with a heavy graphics workload and you have a fast, bright screen like that, the device can get warm. So to keep it from throttling and keep performance high, ASUS added this active cooling module as well. And, you know, it works. In all of the benchmarks, it was one of, if not the fastest phone we've tested. And you get that better screen, you get the cool haptics, and you get the ability to use these accessories. If you're a mobile gamer and that's your thing, I believe it's this phone and the Razer phone is really, they're the two kings right now.
Yeah. The Razer phone. You know, we never did get a chance to look at the Razer phone. And Razer, we're talking to you. You should be sending some stuff in here. I don't know what the deal
is. Yeah, you know, for a company that wants to be engaged so tightly with gamers, I don't know, maybe connect with guys that also connect with gamers.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's an interesting product for sure. I like what ASUS does with, you know, the skins, the UI that are you know, centered around gamers. You've got, you know, you've got, you know, some critical, in, on the software side, you've got some critical, you know, signs, vital signs, I should say, for CPU, GPU, storage, memory. So it really sort of gives you that, you know, some of the interfaces we have on the PC for the phone. OnePlus does that a little bit as well. They have a little bit more access level. So, but this is really, really well done. In terms of, you know, giving you that access, drilling down to the components, seeing how things are running in your phone. And so it's kind of like, you know, a half step into, you know, really noodling on giving a user interface for the gamer that, you know, might be useful for folks that actually care about this stuff. Yeah, obviously the average iPhone user or, you know, mainstream Android phone user that just, you know, they're using smartphones, they're not gamers, they're not going to care about any of this stuff. But for the target market, there's some real value built in here, and it seems pretty well executed. And Paul seemed to like it. I'll have to go look back. Let's look at his hot or nots, because that's what we do at Hot Hardware. We talk about the hots, the pros, and the nots, the cons. And he gave it a recommended, so it passed muster. Excellent all around performance. X mode kicks things up a notch. So you get, you know, some good performance kickers there that you can engage. Air triggers come in handy. Side mounted port keeps the charging cord out of the way in landscape mode. That's key. Got to have ergonomics for gaming in landscape mode. Loud front firing speakers, polished software, camera works really well in low light environments. That's kind of, those are some pretty good high points. The low points, the knots, lacks expandable storage, battery life trails other high-end Android phones, inconsistent camera performance, and normal lighting. So I guess maybe they've probably got, I'd have to look at what their the aperture is in the camera, but maybe it's a wider aperture that they just need to dial in with the software a little bit better. Battery life doesn't surprise me, because if you're pushing this thing, well, I guess it does surprise me. 6-inch OLED display with a 4,000 milliamp hour battery and a Snapdragon 845.
The 845 is clocked higher than everybody else's. That's why the performance was so good. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I didn't catch that. good call. That would do it. Yeah, that little bit of extra megahertz that keeps the SoC out of its standard operating frequency will definitely eat battery exponentially, right?
Yeah, higher refresh screen, higher clocked SoC, that'll do it.
Yeah. High refresh screen too. Good catch there. Marco, you're on your game tonight, man. Hey, so since you're on your game, let's close out, finish up with a little bit of what we're going to give away for the holidays here. I'll let you play Santa. The Hot Hardware and Lenovo holiday giveaway. What are we doing with that?
It's happening. We have some cool stuff, super easy to enter. Lenovo, thank you very much for sponsoring this giveaway. We have three prizes up for grabs. We have the first prize is a Lenovo 10-inch smart display with Google Assistant. Second prize is the 8-inch version of that smart display. And third prize is one of the Star Wars Jedi Challenges AR kit with the Kylo Ren lightsaber accessory. So three really cool prizes. We have reviews of everything up on the site if you want to check out exactly what they are. Think of, you know, the smart displays as a Google Assistant with a screen. Really cool stuff. The review is sweet. Make sure you check it out. We have video of that guy. And the AR challenges kit, really fun, man. You know, Star Wars games where you're basically battling in real life. So really cool prizes, and it could not be easier to enter. You basically just have to visit a couple pages, maybe like a couple pages, follow us, and that is it. Come by the site, check it out. We're going to give this stuff away in less than 2 weeks.
There you go. Thanks to the folks from Lenovo for sponsoring that. Always good to have them with us. And yeah, those smart displays are cool. I actually reviewed one and enjoyed it. It puts a head on Google Assistant, if you will, gives you some eyes and ears. And you can mute that voice and shut the camera. It's got a camera shutter as well, so that if you don't want Google listening to your every whim, it won't. You can mute the microphone and mute the camera. It's a cool little product, and it sounds actually really good. I was impressed with, I had the 10-inch version in for review. I was impressed with the audio quality. I have a Logitech Bluetooth speaker in my kitchen that I just, you know, hook the phones up to, or, you know, whatever, just to stream some music. That thing thumps out some really good volume. This, and that has two speakers. It's a, you know, full size Bluetooth speaker device, has two drivers. This actually keeps up with that with one driver. And I think it's got a bass port. I'm trying to think how the speaker system's set up, but it actually keeps up really well with my Logitech. And I haven't replaced it yet because I'm not completely sold on having Google in my kitchen. But I think for folks that are, the upside is the acoustics of this thing are great. It sounds awesome. It competes with some of the better Bluetooth speakers in the market and gets loud. It can rock. So, you know, yeah, if you want that smart assistant thing, if that's your thing, we're giving them away. So there.
Cool.
All right. And with that, we will, what do you say, Michael? We will bid these folks adieu and say happy holidays and Merry Christmas, you filthy animals.
All that good stuff. Yes, yes, yes. Like and subscribe. Come by the site. Check out all the articles. There's lots more stuff that we do not talk about on the podcast. Tons more stuff. So definitely come by the site and check it out.
Yeah, and that was a Home Alone reference. I really wasn't calling everybody filthy animals, I promise.
He was. He thinks you're all filthy animals.
All right, it's true. It's true. Thanks for stopping by, everybody, and happy holidays. Take care.